This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. When it comes to breast cancer, early detection is key to successful treatment. However, many women are still diagnosed with breast cancer in the late stages. So what are the available treatment options for them? Joining me now is consultant clinical oncologist Dr. Jennifer Leong from Sunway Medical Center to discuss the latest advances in treatment for metastatic breast cancer and to share how it can improve one's quality of life. Welcome, Dr. Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Juliet. Thank you for the kind introduction. And it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes,
at BFM today.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. You know, so lovely to have you on. So, getting straight to it, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, of course. Maybe we can start with a refresher on what advanced or metastatic cancer is.
So when a doctor refers to metastatic breast cancer, it means that the cancer has spread to other parts of the body. Beyond the breast and the draining lymph nodes, which is usually the armpit. So the cancer may spread to the lungs, liver, bones, and at times brain.
Okay, all right. And looking at the Malaysia National Cancer Registry report of 2012 to 2016, about 47.9% of breast cancer among women was detected at a late stage, so either the third or the fourth stage, which is, you know, so much higher compared to the previous report, which was at 43.2%. So, you know, what explains this increase, and are you seeing this in your clinic as well? You know, are more women coming in with late stage breast cancer?
Yeah, firstly, we should applaud the effort made by the respective team in compiling the data for the National Cancer Registry, which enabled us to have a clearer picture on the cancer trend in Malaysia for the last decade. So as can be seen from the registry, which is free and downloadable from the website, breast cancer remains the most common cancer in Malaysia, surpassing colorectal and lung cancer. And when we compare the registry, the recent one in 2012 to 2016, there's a 20% increase in the number of new cases of breast cancer as compared to the previous registry, which is 2007 to 2011. So this reflects that the breast cancer disease still has a huge socioeconomic impact in our community. So back to the questions. We are still seeing a significant number of patients that present at late stage, i.e. at stage 3 or stage 4 breast cancer, to our clinic. So as much as there are significant improvement, I believe, in the screening and diagnostic care, as well as more awareness campaign in the last decade, why are we still seeing such a huge number of patients presenting at late stage? There could be multiple factors to it. But often the delay in seeking treatment is compounded by the fear in the patient of knowing the cancer diagnosis and also a huge misconception regarding the treatment-related side effects.
Yeah, and how does the proportion of women diagnosed with late-stage breast cancer in Malaysia, how does that compare to that in other countries?
I would say that in the developed countries, we are seeing more patients or more proportion in the early stage. So we are presenting at a later stage compared to the developed countries.
Okay, all right. And, you know, what is the age group of women who are often diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer?
Again, back to the registry, we do see that there's a sharp rise in a number of patients that develop breast cancer, metastatic breast cancer, belonging to the age of 35 to 60 years old. And about a third of the patients living with metastatic breast cancer belongs to age 50 and below. And we know these are the group of people who are still actively contributing to the workforce and have young family. Hence, these are very important factors to consider when it comes to outlining the treatment option for the patient. So there's also a shift towards younger age group developing metastatic breast cancer in recent years. And we tend to see more aggressive presentation in this young age group.
And do we know why that is? Not really.
Very interesting questions, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, that diagnosis, you know, that of metastatic breast cancer, that can be so difficult for, you know, patients to accept. So how do you have that conversation with your patients about their diagnosis and, you know, what this is going to mean for them and also, you know, the rest of their family?
Yes, it never gets easier with time when you inform the patients of her diagnosis. But I think ultimately it comes to having a frank, you know, an honest and genuine discussion with the family, with the patient and often family members involved regarding the disease involvement and what are the outline of treatment approach. And it should make sense to the patient what a treatment approach. So ultimately we should respect patients' wish and want when it comes, and to also incorporate them or involve them in the decision making of their treatment.
Yeah, I mean, having that very top down approach is, it doesn't really work all the time, does it?
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
So we want patients to feel comfortable in the clinic setting, yeah, to be able to have an open communication with us so that they know that their opinion is valued and that they are not judged by their own doctors when it comes to sharing their thoughts and opinions, because I think it really matters when it comes to deciding the best treatment. And we know that it is not one treatment fits all. So it is what treatment suits this patient may not suit the other. So ultimately, it comes to a balance between the effectiveness of the treatment as well as if that is what patient really wish and want for.
That's right. And, you know, what outcomes are you trying to achieve when treating this patient? You know, for example, is it about managing their symptoms? Is it about the progression of the cancer or, you know, just improving their quality of life?
So for patients living with metastatic breast cancer, I think it is important the treatment should be able to continue maintaining the quality of life in them. It is so important that they can resume normalcy in their, you know, work or in their family life, and offers as minimal disruption as possible to their current lifestyle. So that said, we also want to tailor the treatment to ensure that the treatment is also able to provide a durable response, i.e. the patient is able to live for a longer period of time before the symptoms start troubling them. And of course, ideally, we like to pick a treatment that can improve their survival outcome.
Of course.
But the key word is definitely maintaining a good quality of life in the patients.
Yeah, I mean, that is what we want to keep living for, isn't it, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and what are the expected outcomes for women diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer today? You know, how much has that changed in recent years?
So we live in a very exciting era of personalized medicine, precision medicine. So we have newer drugs, that offers less side effects, because ultimately patients are very fearful when it comes to treatments such as chemotherapy, because they have known or heard of side effects, you know, either from a friend or friend's friend regarding a potential toxicity. So we have a newer and newer drug, or we call it novel agents, that can offer this patient minimal side effect. It's well tolerable and patient can continue to resume their lifestyle and yet offer them benefit in terms of the disease control. And one such treatment that can be considered in patients with hormone receptor positive metastatic breast cancer is a CDK4/6 inhibitor. I know it all sounds very scientific, but essentially what this drug is, what this group of class drug does, is that it inhibits at the cell level. So it disallows the cell to synthesize the DNA. Mm-hmm. So the tumor cell is not able, it blocks the tumor cell progression. So the tumor cell is not able to continue to replicate.
Okay.
So it halts the progression, and hence it offers the patient a very good durable response, almost doubling what can be offered in standard care, i.e. chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're talking about, you know, the available treatments, right, for metastatic breast cancer. Can you tell me what other treatments are available and, you know, how do they exactly work to help treat the cancer?
So when we look at the patient with metastatic breast cancer, Often there's a few factors to incorporate. So one would be the patient's factor, i.e. How fit the patient is. So the age of the patient, as well as if the patient has any pre-existing illness, plays a very important role. Mm-hmm. So secondly, how much is the tumor burden? So for example, recently I met a relatively young lady who has got an extensive spread to the liver. So it also shows in a liver function test, which is a blood test, and it is quite deranged. So we will classify this, or we would say the lady is in impending organ failure. Mm-hmm. So she is in a crisis. So in such situation where the tumor burden is huge, we often have to counsel the patient for a treatment that can offer a rapid alleviation of symptoms. And this may involve chemotherapy. Okay, so it is important to know that what your treatment can palliate or offer symptom relief in the patient. Mm-hmm. So beyond chemotherapy, of course, there is the combination option of the CDK4/6 and oral hormonotherapy. Both are all oral drugs. So it is very convenient in terms of dosing for patient. Other than that, it's also very important to look into whether other supportive treatments such as radiotherapy may help to control symptoms, and it's usually very effective when it comes to like controlling spread to the bone, so that controlling the pain when the tumor has spread to the bone.
Oh dear. Okay.
That said, I think for patients with metastatic breast cancer, we don't just look at the patient and talk about treatment. It should also be encompass actually a bigger spectrum in terms of supportive treatment. So that is so important.
Yeah, I mean, that was what I was going to ask you. You know, how do you talk to your patients about the best treatment to pursue, you know, or even whether they want to pursue any treatment at all?
Exactly. So I usually would start off by getting to know them mm-hmm. and their support network. Yeah. Explaining about the current stage. And if sometimes patient is keen for it, I will take them through actually their report and their CT scans. Because it does make them feel more involved mm-hmm. in the decision making. Mm-hmm. And then I will, of course, try to explain the available treatment options and tailor it according to each individual patient and explain about the potential side effects. Okay. And what's more important is then to hear what the patient's wish is. What is their goal of treatment? And with that, then, we come to a combined decision-making when it comes to the final decision for which treatment suits them best.
I'm just curious, is treatment the same for metastatic cancer, whether it's a first diagnosis or a recurrence of breast cancer that, you know, that might have been previously cured?
Yes, they could be both type. One is that the patient has been treated, and then after a subsequent time, they relapse. Mm. Or they could be a de novo, which is they present with metastatic breast cancer at onset. The treatment is quite similar, except, of course, we do need to know what was the previous treatment received. So if the patient had received certain form of, say, endocrine or hormone therapy, we often do not repeat in the subsequent management. So it may affect in that sense.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Jennifer Leong. She's a consultant clinical oncologist from Sunway Medical Center, and we're discussing advances in treating metastatic breast cancer. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the side effects that come with treatments like chemotherapy. So do stay tuned. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Being diagnosed with cancer can be difficult for patients and their family members. At the Sunway Medical Center, personalized cancer care through a multidisciplinary approach offers you the best expertise available. The team is here to help you through this journey. For more information, visit sunwaymedical.com.
Welcome back. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today is Dr. Jennifer Leong. She is a consultant clinical oncologist from Sunway Medical Center, and we're discussing advances in treating metastatic breast cancer. It is, of course, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness Month this month as well, you know, in October. And, you know, just before the break, Dr. Jennifer, we were talking about all the different sorts of treatments that are available. And, you know, treatments like chemotherapy, for example, those are known to cause significant side effects in cancer patients. So how do you find that balance, you know, between improving survival of patients and, of course, you know, what we were talking about so much, maintaining that good quality of life?
For most patients, dealing with chemotherapy imposes a very huge anxiety, mainly because of the potential side effects. But I think when managed right and when you can anticipate the side effects, you are able to manage them well. Yeah, so the key is to look out for them. But that said, of course, currently, we do have other options where the patient can choose beyond chemotherapy. And it does improve their quality of life in that chemotherapy may have a higher risk of them developing complications such as low blood count, and they may develop fever from it. So, which may be preventable from the other treatment options. As well as a lot of women do have a fear of losing their hair.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, we can understand and we try to tailor that. Of course, we will try to pick regime that will not affect that. But we know that to a significant number of patients, that loss of hair may still happen with chemotherapy. So again, it comes down ultimately to the patient's wish. If let's say their wish is for them not to have these side effects, we will try to work around it.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful, you know, the having those open discussions, and you keep mentioning it, and I think that's really, you know, something that people need to hear, you know, that there are options available and that they can discuss it with their doctors, you know, that that option is there for them. And but, you know, I do understand that in some cases, metastatic breast cancer may stop responding to drugs. Am I correct? Mm-hmm. How does that affect the treatment plan for the patient? And, you know, what happens following from that?
So as much as we like the drug, you know, to continue working for a long period of time, we do see this in the clinic. And this can happen especially when the tumor starts developing or the cancer starts developing resistance towards the current treatment, i.e. the tumor is able to find a new mechanism, a new pathway to overcome the drug mechanism. So we will then have a discussion with the patient based on the clinical judgment. If we feel that the drug is no longer working, we will inform the patient. Yeah, the rationale of stopping the medication. And of course, if the patient is still fit for further treatment, we will then discuss the next line of treatment. Now, also, participation into clinical trials is also very important here, because sometimes the patient may have exhausted the standard of care treatment. So if there is an enrollment into clinical trials, that should be considered or at least be explored with the patient.
Okay, and you know, when this happens, right, I can imagine it must cause a lot of anxiety among patients, right? And how do you talk them through that, you know, especially with news that their cancer has stopped responding to a particular drug?
Again, it's never easy. Yeah, it's never easy. But I think the main thing is to be able to see if they are actually developing new symptoms. Yeah. So often we can pick that up, yeah, when we see patient and there are new signs for us to be alert of or from the imaging scan.
Okay.
So one is to make them understand the reason why we are stopping, because they may be very happy with the drug, you know, and there are very minimal side effects. For example, if it's an oral drug, and they would prefer not to have that disrupted. So they would like to continue it. And I do have patients who ask me, but I'm still feeling so good. You know, I'm still feeling so well. I'm eating so well. So I'm gaining weight. So why are you stopping my treatment? So, yeah, it's always a very fine balance about whether by continuing the treatment. We of course, if we feel that the progression is minimal, we may allow the patient to continue on the treatment, but with close monitoring. I.e. maybe repeat the scan earlier, you know, or watch the patient carefully. But if the progression is obvious, then we will have to find a way to make the patient, you know, understand so that they eventually know that what we are doing is that we care for them. And yeah, we ultimately want the best for them.
Okay. All right. And maybe now we can talk about some of the advances that you've seen in treatments and how they have impacted outcomes for patients.
We have, of course, in the traditional sense of approach in terms of management, it's always been if the patient has early breast cancer, they will undergo surgery followed by consideration of whether they should receive radiotherapy and chemotherapy. And this is to minimize the risk of the cancer coming back. Mm. So it depends on the stage of the disease. And usually we get this from the report following the surgery. And a patient who have a hormone receptor positive will then be counseled for hormonal therapy, either 5 or 10 years. But for patients with metastatic breast cancer, it goes beyond that, yeah? Besides radiation, which is used to control symptoms, or chemotherapy, which can help to rapidly control symptoms, which like I shared earlier, like in extensive liver metastasis, hormonal therapy is an option. So right now, the combination therapy of CDK4/6 inhibitor and endocrine agent is one way of going forward. And in fact, this has been the new recommendation in most of the international guidelines. And with that, I also like to introduce the local clinical practice guideline for breast cancer. So we do have a local one, a Malaysian one, that was just released about a month ago. So it's available in the Academy of Medicine website, and it's free, and it's very good in that it does, it's very comprehensive. Right, it takes you from the primary prevention technique, screening, up till treatment strategy. So actually the public can go and, you know, have a read on it. Yeah. So when it comes to metastatic breast cancer, more and more drugs are currently being explored. And the other interesting option is the realms of immunotherapy. So we have seen a very good result, promising result with immunotherapy in other tumor sites, such as lung cancer.
Okay.
Yeah. And so currently these are being used or being explored further in the in metastatic breast cancer as well. So we look forward to, yeah, for the results.
And, you know, earlier you mentioned clinical trials, right? I mean, that is also an option. I mean, talk to me about the role of clinical trials, you know. How do you go through the benefits and risks of such clinical trials with your patients?
So clinical trials are a good way to get a patient to, of course, contribute towards research. And a lot of time, a lot of our patients are very happy to do so. But of course, we do counsel them about the potential, because sometimes in the clinical trials, we do have the placebo arms, i.e. the patient may not actually receive the, you know, the research drug or the standard of care. So we do tell them in details, and basically we let them know the rationale of why the trial is being done.
Okay.
Yeah. And very important is to outline the safety
of the
treatment. Yeah. And it is important also to pick the right candidate for the trial, because sometimes this trial mandates that patient comes often to for follow-up and screening, you know, and some patients who live far away may have problems doing that. But of course, ideally, we would like to pick the right patient when it comes to their clinical criteria, and less of, you know, logistic reasons.
Okay. And I'm curious to know, you know, are there any areas of research involving metastatic breast cancer that you are particularly excited about?
I am. In fact, I am involved, still involved in the trial for a Malaysian patient when it comes to the CDK4/6 inhibitor and the endocrine therapy. I have two patients, and from my own experience, I do see that the patient has got a very durable response.
Oh, that's lovely.
And one is a mid-30s. She is also a healthcare provider, and the other patient is in her mid-50s, and she has heard a lot about chemotherapy and its side effects. That say, I'm not saying chemotherapy is bad. It's just that this option allows the patient to have a wider, you know, treatment option for them. So from my own experience, the patient is so far doing well, maintaining well on the drugs. Yeah.
Okay, that's wonderful to hear.
Happy. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, just looking at what you've observed in terms of how patients cope psychologically with a diagnosis of metastatic breast cancer, you know, how are they dealing with, you know, the treatment plan as well as the impact on their daily lives?
So I think sometimes as clinicians, we may underestimate the impact of the disease when it comes to their psychological and emotional aspect of the patient. Because we often look at, you know, the heart data, the scans, and then, because we're always trying to find the best treatment for the patient and things. But we must not forget about the invisible part, which is actually a lot of studies have shown that a huge proportion, even up to 50% of women living with breast cancer, having this psychological impact, emotional issue, because there is a negative shift towards, they feel that they are not contributing enough to their household responsibilities. So when they're dealing with the treatment itself, there's a lot of anxiety when it comes to that. And they also, if the treatment mandates that they go to the daycare or get hospitalized, there is a loss of income. You know, financial catastrophe is a real issue in a lot of our patients. So the key point here is to actually be aware, because you have to know what to look out for. And if you see potential early signs, symptoms of a patient having that psychological, emotional impairment, is to refer, to have a chat with them, and to sort of offer referral to a counselor, you know, professional help, or to a psychologist.
Very important.
So that they can cope better, so they have better coping mechanism when it comes to their disease. And this will impact on the compliance to their treatment, as well as to the entire positive outlook. So they continue to feel confident and that, you know, they don't feel stigmatized by their disease.
Yeah, so important, you know, not to let it, you know, get to you basically, right, as much as possible.
That's right.
And, you know, with the pandemic, you know, has that further impacted them, you know, especially since cancer patients fall under the high-risk group?
We have, in fact, adapt our treatment to suit the pandemic in that the patient undergoing radiotherapy, in accordance with the international guideline, we have also shortened the time of treatment, but still within, of course, it is still safe. And it is still effective, So we do that, and then we try to also try to minimize patients' visit to the hospitals. So which means that treatment that require hospitalization or, you know, a more intensive regime may not be preferred, because I think patients are also fearful to come to the hospital, you know, unnecessarily. So this is actually the right time for us to relook back at how we manage the patient and how we can be more effective in terms that we can make the treatment more convenient, less hassle for the patient.
I mean, they're already dealing with so much, right? You know, this is just all added stress, which is unnecessary in that sense.
Yes, added stress of coming to the hospital. And then if they were to undergo elective procedure, they might need to do a COVID screening and all that. It's all not very... but we make it work.
Yeah, of course.
We'll try to make it work.
And, you know, just looking at the needs of patients with metastatic breast cancer, you know, are they different or how are they different from patients with, let's say, early stage breast cancer?
So a lot of time, a patient with metastatic breast cancer may have symptoms depending on where the spread is. So they may have continuous symptoms such as a bone pain or sometimes tummy discomfort. Yeah, so they will need some form of supportive treatment. So back to the patient that I shared earlier with the extensive spread to the liver, she actually presented with progressively distension of her tummy. So we found that there are fluid in her tummy. Yeah, and it's gotten so uncomfortable that she's not able to lie down comfortably, and it's affecting her sleep as well as her mood in general. So what we do is that I admitted her, and then we had the fluid drained.
Okay.
So the drainage of fluid is one way to relieve the symptom in the patient. So sometimes it could also be how to manage the pain control. Yeah, because ultimately it's what makes the patient feel comfortable so that they can resume their normal lifestyle. So patients with metastatic breast cancer often have got symptoms that we need to treat, so that they can continue to feel better. As opposed to someone with a patient with early stage breast cancer, a lot of time they present with a painless lung, okay, and they get checked, and it's confirmed to be cancer, they have it removed, and then they had the subsequent treatment may impose some side effects,
mm-hmm.
but usually it does resolve with time, yeah.
Okay.
And then they continue to be able to resume either their work, get back to what they used to be doing, their social life. But unlike that, the metastatic breast cancer patient will continue to maybe have that symptoms. So we want to pick a treatment that is able to try to reduce the symptom in them.
All right. And, what kind of support do patients need or want, both from their doctor and their family when they are faced with the reality of living with an incurable cancer, for example?
Mm-hmm. So despite the word incurable, we want to make sure that they continue to lead a fulfilling life.
Of course.
That's very, very important. So family support to me is very crucial, and in fact one of the most important essence in part of their treatment strategy. So a good family support, a lot of time my patient shares their concern with me is that will the treatment actually they are worried about their children, who is going to manage their children, because they were living their life, the children are schooling, so they are always concerned about, will the treatment take me away from my kids? So who's going to manage them, and who's going to put the food on the table?
Mm.
Yeah, because obviously there is a loss of the caretaker role, as well as a loss of income. So and with this pandemic, we know that a lot of job losses have been there, and so this may affect their spouse. So I think as a clinician, we need to know all this. So it's not just about outlining the treatment as to what you feel best when it comes to data and figures, but it's actually what suits that patient best. So we have to go down to the ground level, have a heart-to-heart talk. So often the consultation may be long, especially the first consultation, but I think what is important is out of that consultation, you are able to open up, make the patient open up and have that open communication with you so that they feel that you know them best and that they can rely on you to make that decision with them, not just for them. So when it comes to family support, so the physical help is important, the physical support. So having someone to maybe help them manage their chores, even simple things like cooking. So cooking for them when they're in the hospital or things like that, it makes a lot of difference, not having to worry about, food.
Yeah.
We don't care about our food.
Yeah.
So to have that nutritional support going on, and the other part of support is the emotional support. I think ultimately is to be able to offer a listening ear to the patient, as a family, and to be supportive. And I know a lot of time, patients to tell me that family members voice their concerns over certain treatment.
Right.
Of course they mean well, but they have their reservations. So this may actually contribute to a lot of confusion and further anxiety in the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So I think ultimately is to listen to the professionals, you know, and share your concern with us, and just be very supportive of the treatment that if you know someone is undergoing certain treatment for any type of cancer, is to continue to stand by them. And that includes, yeah, just offering a listening ear.
Yeah. You know, you spoke a lot about family, but I think peer support might also be quite important,
yes, right?
Right. Is that also, you know, especially with maybe other patients, you know, does that play an important role as well?
Mm-hmm. So I think we can also, yeah, the cancer support network, yeah, among peers and breast cancer survivors are also very important for the patients, because they can share the experience with each other and also their knowledge, you know, and their coping mechanism. So yes, that is also a very important aspect that we should explore with every patient, okay, and offer them, you know, the information and the access to such network.
And I think it helps, you know, especially when, you know, as you mentioned, family and friends, they come with you with their reservations, right? And we all know about WhatsApp groups and how detrimental those can be. So it's really good to speak to patients who have also been through this, yeah, you know, to sort of work through all those, maybe it's misinformation, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, that peer support is really, really important as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are pros and cons to the
of course
social media. And also nowadays, patients are very, you know, knowledgeable. So they will Google, yeah, and they'll find out about all the treatment, which I think it's fair, you know, on their side. It is about being equipped with the all the information they can get before they see a doctor. Yeah. But ultimately, it's to, yeah, have that discussion with your doctor. Like, would this suit me? You know, I've read about this. So I think most doctors are, you know, happy to just let you know more, because some things are still in research or still in trials.
That's right.
They may not have a clear cut evidence based medicine. But by knowing what your patient is googling, you know, by knowing how much they know, then we can actually help them get the help them put the information right. I think the key is that. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, you know, as I mentioned, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You know, yes, would you have a final message for us, you know, in conjunction with that?
Yeah, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I would like to say that early detection is the key, because we know that early, if you have a symptom that is worrying you, you're not sure, do try to seek professional help early, because early detection leads to early diagnosis. And that leads to an improved survival outcome for the patient, yeah. And that there are many, many treatment options now, newer treatment options, I mean, in metastatic breast cancer. So even if one is living with incurable breast cancer, yeah, we do not want the focus to be on the word incurable. So there are still, yeah, options available where you can continue to live a fruitful life, you know, your friends, family, and this is a discussion that needs to be made with the doctors, with you know, and the healthcare providers. So lastly, yeah, do check out the Malaysian Clinical Practice Guideline if you're free. It's very informative, and stay safe.
Okay.
So the pandemic.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Jennifer. That was wonderful. I've been speaking to Dr. Jennifer Leong. She's a consultant clinical oncologist from Sunway Medical Center, and we were discussing advances in treating metastatic breast cancer. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Health and Living interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.